with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy Wednesday, everybody, as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Lots to get into over the course of the next 2 hours. OTA is well underway now. We got plenty of sound coming in from NFL press conferences. Plus, the NBA conference finals started off last night with a bang. Make that a double bang if you heard Mike Breen on that Jaylen Brown three-pointer at the end of regulation, Michael. Lots of fun. We'll talk NBA. We'll talk plenty of football throughout the course of the day. But I got to start off here letting you know, I learned the hard way today, this morning, how reliant I am on technology. I have not had internet all morning long, and trying to prep the show and trying to get my life together has felt so challenging. Like, I don't know how people did it in the olden times.
We didn't. We read the newspaper. Do you remember? There was a thing called the newspaper.
I was
at the Valley Forge Military Academy, and there was like two newspapers at the school. So you had to go down to the library and sit there and wait in line to read it. That's how you got news. I mean, imagine that. I don't know how you did it. I don't know how you can get ready for a show without that. It's impossible. But God bless you. I'm sure you're ready to go. No one's more prepared. So thank you, Stormy. And how did you lose internet? What happened?
I don't know if something's weird on my computer or if something's weird with a router connection. What's going on? But I don't have any. So please just, I preface the whole show today with, don't ask me to check anything because I won't be able to today. So bear with me.
I'll check it for you.
We're still going to have plenty of fun. We got the whole crew here, Elliot Bowman behind the scenes running the ship for us. But let's dive right into the NBA where hell of a game last night. The Pacers could have won, probably should have won, but it ends up the Boston Celtics at home closing things out here in game one, 133-128 in overtime. Michael, what was your big takeaway from the game specifically there at the end?
Well, I mean, look, the Pacers had their chances, right? And I think to me, you know, the question you have to ask yourself is the Pacers playing well and Boston didn't play well, or can the Pacers compete with them? But what I was seeing was the Pacers feel like they can compete with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I know Tatum was 12 for 26 from the field. He didn't play as well. 2-8 again. He's not shooting the ball from three. Only time he shot the ball well from the 3-point line was when he gave you your little tease play that you made there. But for the most part, I don't know if this is, I think the Pacers can play with them. I think there's a confidence there. I think Carlisle took a responsibility for the loss, and that shot that Brown hit from the corner, my Lord. I mean, how many times is he going to make that shot or else it's a win for the Pacers? So I think much like the first game they played against the Knicks, I said this to you, there's a sense of confidence that they had when they played the Knicks. They went to lose game two, but they came back. I think this Pacer team's a little bit more resilient. We give them credit for.
Yeah, and it did look like they were able to carry over some of the momentum from the previous series and the way they won. The very start of the game had you questioning everything if you liked Indiana like we did yesterday. We took the 10. We talked about it with Will Hill when he was on the program. Also, shout out Claudia Bellafato, who hit her prop with Miles Turner over 15.5 points. He had 23. But to go back to the Pacers side of it, slow start, but then it's like any time that they got down 10, they were able to work their way back in. They were able to work their way back in, tied at 64 at halftime. Should have won, again, up three with 10 seconds to go. Indiana, Michael, the first team in recorded history to lose a playoff game with the ball up three and 10 or few seconds to go. The Pacers lamenting their missed opportunity to seal game one and home court with that win. Here is head coach Rick Carlisle after the game talking about the end of regulation situation.
This loss is totally on me. With 10 seconds in regulation, we should have just taken the timeout, advanced the ball, and found a way to get it in and made a free throw or two and ended the game. But it didn't happen, and we made some other mistakes. But our guys just need to concentrate on fighting the way they fought in this game from start to finish. And we'll be back Thursday.
Was there instruction to foul before that Brown three, even though there wasn't really a chance to do so?
Yes, but he caught the ball and he was face up, so Pascal decided to lay off, which was, you know, I understand, you know, that's probably the right decision. You don't want to give up a 4-point play.
Well, and so costly, Michael, both of those moments. It's not like you can isolate one and say this is the reason they lost, but two, just egregious mistakes to make with 10 seconds to go.
No question. And Halliburton took responsibility, too. He had two turnovers down the stretch, too, that cost him. So, look, you know, it's never one play, but I think what Carlisle's addressing, and as you're correct, is the game management aspect of the game. You know, you got the ball with 10 seconds. You can't lose that game. You've got to do everything in your power to avoid losing. And what he's saying, he didn't do it. But life goes on. It's a seven-game series. Now, we know Boston has their ups and downs, and we could see it in this game. And I think the Pacers are showing us that they have a good bench. They're very good. And where was the Celtic defense, Stormy? I mean, where was it? You know, this is a game that's, you know, both teams, I know it went to overtime, but both teams, we know the Pacers don't play great defense, but where was the Celtics defense? I think that's something we have to look to.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of money come in on the over pre-tip-off. That thing soared over in regulation, didn't even need overtime, but the final score, 133-128, when the pregame total was 121.5. So do you think that that could be a trend for the series moving forward? Obviously, we know the Celtics like to shoot the three a lot, and the Pacers play with pace.
Yeah, they play with pace. And, I mean, look, they shot the ball really well. I mean, look, they get 15 points out of Toppin off the bench. They get another 13 off of T.J. McConnell. Their bench is good. You know, and Halliburton, he took 18 shots in the game. You know, 14 of them were three-point shots. So they're trying to space the court. I do think they'll move the ball. And I think that this team can play. I think there's a sense of confidence. Look, Holiday's a really good player. And, you know, Brown made the key shots. White made the key three-pointer to get him back. Same thing with Horford. But I really get the sense that this bench for the Pacers can make a difference. Now, if Porzingis comes back, maybe that changes everything. But right now, I think this is going to be a better series than we anticipated.
If there's something with the Pacers to be concerned about, in addition to obviously the clutch moments there, it was the turnovers. Burned by 22 turnovers, including two in those final 27 seconds. Second most turnovers committed by the Pacers all season, which turned into 32 Boston Celtics points, which were the most points off turnovers that the Celtics had scored all season. That would be a huge difference in this game if the Pacers were just able to hold on to the ball. And also, speaking of pace, Michael, you talk about, you know, the way that they play and Tyrese Halliburton, some of his mistakes and his errors late. Like, why, when there's 30 seconds to go in the game, are you still running down the court? Like, this, speaking of this game management and being able to maintain what you're doing, like, slow it down. Let's run some clock out. He's still just playing like it's the third quarter.
Yeah, at some point you got to say, look, you know, we can win this game. And I think that comes from the coach. Like, I think sometimes the players get caught up in the moment. The coach has got to come out and say, hey, look, we can win this game, but we got to be smart. And, you know, we got to be simple and smart. I mean, that's always a hard thing to do. But I was, you know, it was a great game. I was excited that it went to overtime. I thought that made it even better. But, you know, how many times is Brown going to hit that corner three? You know, I mean, I know it's the easiest three-pointer to make, but that was a difficult shot, especially with Siakam coming at him. You know, hats off to Boston for fighting through it. I mean, we talked about them not being able to see any resiliency or face any resiliency over this. Last night, they faced it.
Yep, they had to face it for sure. With that, let's hear from Jaylen Brown, who exhibited a whole lot of poise to be able to make that head fake and make the clutch corner three to force overtime. Here's Jaylen Brown.
Welcome to the NBA playoffs. You just got to manage your emotions at a game. Anything can happen. The game is not over until the final whistle, the final buzzer sounds. And that was a good example of that. I think it's always great to come out with a win, but obviously we got to tighten up in some areas, and we're going to watch the film. I think majority of it was just transition. I think they just, you know, we knew they were going to be fast. It didn't surprise us, but it's one thing watching it on film and then seeing it in person. They just got out of a dogfight with New York, and it just felt like they was just flying by us, getting easy layups. We got to be better. We got to match their intensity if we want to win this series.
Yeah, he's right. And speaking of dogfights, they could find themselves in one if they don't play better and step their game up, as he referenced there. With that, Michael, the Celtics are a 9-point favorite coming up again in game two. So still big favorites here. Total 224.5. That game coming up Thursday. As far as the updated series price, they go from minus 900, minus 1,000. Minus now 1,600. Is this a little bit more out of hand than you'd expect, considering how well the Pacers did play in this first game? They should have won it.
I think the numbers are reflecting kind of what I said at the start of the show, that I think people feel like that was the Pacers playing their best game and Boston not playing well. But I didn't see it that way. I didn't see it that way. I thought the Pacers have a sense of confidence coming out of that. We can win this game, like they did when they played the Knicks. Now, they went on, lost game two against the Knicks, but they had a sense of confidence against the Knicks. I don't think the Pacers are intimidated at all by the Boston Celtics whatsoever. Now, you know, if Porzingis comes back, does that change things? Of course it does. But I think the Pacers have gained confidence with even the losses, they gained confidence. I'd be surprised. I mean, I know those – I thought the numbers would have shrunk a little bit based on what I was seeing. But I think the book is really saying, look, Boston's going to win this. Mm-hmm. And if you want to risk $1,900 to do it, go ahead.
And we'll have further discussion on this game a little bit later on in the show. Nick Whalen of NBA Radio on SiriusXM, RotoWire, he'll join us. We'll get some of his thoughts on how to approach the series still from a futures perspective. And, of course, the game coming up tomorrow. But also, we've got a game coming up tonight in the Mavericks and Timberwolves as the Western Conference Final gets underway. Timberwolves, a 4.5-point favorite, total 207. I know we're against the break, but any early thoughts there?
Well, I think, you know, look, one thing about Dallas is they tend to start slow in these series. You know, we saw it against the Clippers. We see it here. It's always they're good at adjusting. And I think that's going to be the key to this whole series is how they adjust. And if Kleber's back, and I was just checking to see, I mean, I think he's listed as doubtful. I don't think he's going to play the injury report, you know, in terms of that. And so they need him because his size he gives them, he's coming off of it. You know, we'll see if he can play. But apparently they believe he is going to eventually play at some point in this series. And Mark Davis tonight will be your official.
Well, a hell of a start to the conference finals. We'll see if the Western side of things can live up to the billing and the excitement that we had last night. Okay, that's our NBA talk for the hour. NFL, the rest of this hour, starting with some of the sound that we heard coming off of the podium yesterday. Aaron Rodgers is doing everything, but what does it really mean? We'll get into it all. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN Live, don't forget about all the betting tools and content available each and every day at VSiN.com. Best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips and trends. And right now on the homepage, VSiN senior NBA analyst JVT has previews, picks and predictions up for all things Eastern and Western Conference Finals, daily write-ups in the NHL, Major League Baseball, WNBA, and of course, plenty of NFL offseason content. Adam Burke this week posted a blueprint for all 18 weeks of Survivor and our own Michael Lombardi with new columns each and every week. The latest this morning, the interim coach dilemma. We will talk about Antonio Pierce's transition from interim to the head man a little bit later on in the show. VSiN.com, your one-stop shop for all things betting. But as we welcome you back into the program alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you, I want to break down some of the sound that we heard over the last 24 hours as NFL OTAs have gotten underway, Michael. And we had some fun with this during rookie minicamp with the GM translator, and I need your help again. So we're going to put your BS meter to the test and get the truth behind some of these sound bites. We're going to start out there in Jets country with Aaron Rodgers, who head coach Robert Saleh said had no limitations. He can, quote, do everything. And entering his 21st season, he knows the expectations that are upon him this year, as well as this coaching staff and team. Here's Rodgers.
You said earlier there's pressure on all of us.
All of us, yeah.
Why do you say there's pressure on you?
Well, I think if I don't do what I know I'm capable of doing, we're all probably going to be out of here. So I like that kind of pressure, though. I know there's, you know, it's a tough market to play in. It's not for everybody. I relish that opportunity. And that's the way the NFL is. I'm not saying anything monumental as you guys are typing away and putting your tweets out. This is how it is every single year. You might not just say it, but as you get older in the league, if you don't perform, they're going to get rid of you or bring in the next guy to take over. I mean, it happened in Green Bay. So, and I'm, you know, a few years older than I was back then. So I expect to play at a high level. I expect this to be productive and competitive and all that stuff to take care of itself.
I think the two big ones there, Michael, were at the end. Well, it happened in Green Bay. That was fascinating. But then at the very start, if I don't know, I know what I'm capable of doing. And if I don't, we're all probably going to be out of here.
Right. I think what he's saying is he acknowledged he didn't play well in Green Bay in 2021, right? And that caused him to get out of there along with some other things. But he's absolutely correct. Look, they're going to go as far as he can play. I mean, Tyrod Taylor's the backup, and that gives them somebody that maybe could play two or three games. But this is really all on Rodgers and his ability to execute the offense and help the offensive line, help the receivers do the things that he's capable of doing when he was playing well in 21 and 20, yeah, when he won the MVPs. We'll see if that can be recreated. Now, I don't know if you can say it's going to happen based on mini camps or OTA days, because there's no contact. There's no pads on these players.
You're going to love this tweet from ESPN's Rich Cimini. He says, a good showing for Aaron Rodgers today. Yesterday, of course. He's rekindling that chemistry with Garrett Wilson, hitting him on two short routes. He zipped a 6-yard touchdown pass to Wilson on a seeing eye pass through traffic, somehow squeezed it into tight coverage by CJ Mosley. Overall, Rodgers was 8-for-10 on 11-on-11. Keep in mind, this is non-contact, but the QB1 was sharp for a guy who hasn't played a game in a long time. Hashtag Jets. Just like getting Jets fans hyped up already from just the non-contact stuff. It's great. This is what we're going to keep getting.
No question. And look, let's be clear. The Jets are a man-to-man. They play more man-to-man than they have in recent years. You know, they're going to play their cover three. It's not they're a static defense. He's nowhere they're going to line up. He should look good. You know, Mosley's a really good player. Hard to throw the ball on the Jets inside the numbers. So, you know, this is going to be something to get his feet wet, get him going. But I fully expect him to have a good OTAs. I'm not worried about. I'm worried about opening day against the 49ers with Joey Bosa or Nick Bosa over there rushing down over off of Tyron Smith if he's healthy.
Yeah, no question about it. And the guy who popped that Achilles last year on the opposite side now with San Francisco. So a lot of layers to that. Also, we heard from Robert Saleh at the podium yesterday, Michael, who answered some questions on reports regarding his offensive coordinator. Take a listen.
There's a report that you guys legitimately tried to hire someone who would replace Nathaniel Hackett. What was the thinking there?
I addressed all that stuff at the owners' meeting, so I'm not going to rehash
it. Well, this was a report last week.
It was rehashed from the owners' meeting.
Translation, Michael. What should we be reading through here? I feel like Saul is pleading the fifth again.
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, one thing about Saleh, he'd be a horrible poker player, right? He'd be a horrible poker player. You could see right through him. I mean, you could see it. He doesn't want to indict himself. Can I have my attorney come up here, please? I'm going to need some help here. I'm going to need some legal advice here. You know, you can almost see that, you know, tell him to plead the fifth. Look, we all know the problem, right? We all know that is if they're going to run the basic Nathaniel Hackett, West Coast, very easy offense, that it can be successful to a point, but it's going to need adjustments. It's going to need some creativity. Where that's coming from, I don't know. You know, they had some changes on their coaching staff, but they haven't had the significant changes on their coaching staff that you would suspect. So for me, I think when you break this down, you know, we can talk all about, yeah, well, they're going to try to get more, you know, different coaches in, and they're going to try to do different things. Well, I mean, who's on the staff that's going to take over, and who is going to be that person who takes over, right? I think that's the key question. Who is going to be that, right? They hired a new running back coach in Troy Dews. They hired a wide receiver coach in Sean Jefferson. Everybody else is back. So Nathaniel's going to run it.
And I think the response, by the way, that Saleh had there, or lack thereof, really was pretty telling in the sense that he had the opportunity to shut it down and say, no, we weren't planning on moving on from Hackett. We believe in him. We believe in the trust that he and Aaron Rodgers have together. Like, he had a golden opportunity on the platform, on that podium, to say something, and he elected not to, which sometimes speaks volumes. Let's go
out. Says a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Says a lot, yeah.
Let's go out to Pittsburgh, where we have two quarterbacks in Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, who are both in an interesting position here. Russell Wilson, Mike Tomlin has said, is in pole position to be QB1 out the gates. But here's Justin Fields on his approach to what he is calling a competition.
I'm definitely, you know, competing. I think, you know, Russ knows that. We're competing against each other every day. Him being out there for me, that, you know, helps me getting better, us pushing each other. So, I mean, I definitely don't have the mindset of, you know, me just, you know, sitting all year. So, you know, I'm coming in every day, giving it all I got, and, you know, pushing him to be his best, and he's, you know, pushing me to be my best each and every day. So I appreciate that.
Where do you see yourself going from here? Do you feel like you're a player that's still ascending and can still grow a lot? Oh,
I know I am. I mean, I'm not the same quarterback as I was last year, and I'm not the same quarterback as I even was yesterday. So I'm, you know, going to continue to get better each and every day.
So he doesn't have the mindset he's going to sit for long, Michael. How do you see things shaking out between the two QBs?
I mean, it's the only mindset he should have. He's a young player, right? And he's got his future is, obviously, they didn't pick up his fifth year. He's going to become a free agent. I mean, what would you expect him to say? I'm enjoying holding the clipboard? I mean, seriously, like, what do they expect? Oh, it's news. Justin Fields says he's going to compete. What do you expect him to say? You know, I just like a good clipboard in my hand. You know, I just like that. And I like to drink Gatorade in between series. You know, like, come on, give me a break. Of course he's going to try to compete. And of course he's going to try to win the job. You know, and none of this is going to be happening until we get to where we have competitive situations. Key for him is to be prepared. It's that old Tom Brady. When you get the reps that they're going to give you, you got to make the most of them. And you can't have a mental mistake, and you can't have a mental error. You've got to be able to handle all that. And so he's got to win over coaches. We'll see how that works out. But I would expect him to compete because his career is at a crossroads right now. He got traded for a 2025 sixth-round pick, which is essentially a seventh-round pick this year.
And it's interesting you mentioned they don't pick up the fifth-year option. They also don't owe anything to Russell Wilson because Denver is paying him so much. So both guys kind of playing for contracts. Steelers win total 8.5, toughest schedule of any team in the NFL this year. Let's hit one more. A guy that you know well in Jim Harbaugh, Denzel Perriman, was talking about his new head coach in Los Angeles. Here's Denzel.
My first impression of Harbaugh, like, I hope I don't get in trouble for this, but like, he reminds me of Will Ferrell. Like, I don't know if it's the way that he talks, like, you know, his analogies and everything, but like they really remind me of Will Ferrell. And I don't know, it's just funny to me. Like, it's funny, but I know like he means well, like everything's come, you know, from the heart. But I feel like you gotta have a sense of humor to understand, you know, like some of his lines and gimmicks. But I love him. I love him as a coach. Like I said, I love the direction that he got us going in. He played the game, he played here, and he understands.
Sound about right to you, Michael?
Sounds about perfectly right. Yes, he is a cartoon. I don't want to call him a cartoon. He's a TV sitcom character. You know, I don't get the Will Ferrell reference, but maybe, you know, I mean, when I think Will Ferrell, I'm always thinking what characters is he playing? You know, Harry Carey and, you know, and that with Jeff Goldblum's one of my favorite scenes that he did, you know. But I think to me, Harbaugh's authentic. He is who he is, and he's not going to bluff it. He is who he is.
I think it's like the way Will Ferrell speaks in some of his roles, like, I'm kind of a big deal. It smells of rich mahogany, right? Like, that's how you have Harbaugh saying, I don't need chicken, it's a nervous bird. Like, those types of things are what come to the forefront. We'll be right back talking more NFL on the other side.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You know, we here at VSiN and the Lombardi Line love to help you out. And right now we have an awesome offer that can do just that. Our annual subscription is usually $240, but if you subscribe right now, you can get it for $199. And you'll also get an extra 2 months for free. So that's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day. And all you need to do to cash in is use our promo code for this show, Lombardi, L-O-M-B-A-R-D-I. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199. But you gotta use that code Lombardi. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Time to discuss if, with the hype train rolling for these NFL teams, if we want to hop on the train or take the risk of just jumping off and saying, sorry, Charlie, that's not going to happen. Let's start with the Dallas Cowboys, who maybe there's not the usual amount of hype around them, but because they are the Dallas Cowboys and they're America's team, they're being talked about more than just about any other team not named the Jets. So, 3 straight 12-win seasons, Michael. Win total set at 10.5. Juice is actually on the under here, minus 120. Over is at even money. But are you believing the hype that in what feels like a Super Bowl or bust year, that things could happen for Dallas?
I'm not buying that hype. I have said this and have been on record. I thought they overachieved last year. Nobody wants to. It's like Mike McCarthy's like Tom Thibodeau. Nobody wants to give him credit for anything, right? Nobody. no matter what happens with the Knicks, it wasn't Thibodeau. It was something else, right? It was the water at the Garden. It was the popcorn. You know, it's the same thing with Dallas. Dak has his best year, and it wasn't McCarthy. It had to be Kellen Moore's tutelage when he left. I don't know. But to me, the concerns about the offensive line, their inability to beat good teams, and who's going to help, who's going to cover on defense? Diggs last year missed all the season with ACL. He takes a lot of chances. How good are they on defense? Parsons' contract always worries you. CeeDee Lamb's contract always worries you. You know, and then you look, they open up on the road in Cleveland, you know, and if things don't go well, say they go to Cleveland and lose, come back and beat the Saints, right? And say they lose at home to Baltimore. Now they get to go play the Giants, Pittsburgh, and Detroit before. I mean, they have a chance to be 3-3, mm-hmm. but 3-3 in Dallas is going to weigh heavy on you.
If you think you can get three of those wins, plus 190 in the wins in the first five games market that you saw on your screen a moment ago. But yeah, it's a team, Michael, that has so much pressure on them. And this was one of those things that I already knew the answer because we talked about it in hour one. But I still had to tee it up, like see if maybe I could tie you in and buy you in on doing something else. You mentioned the lack of success against good teams. Another team that had that narrative about them is the Miami Dolphins. They had the number one offense in the NFL last year. They returned to Tua Tagovailoa, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, added more talent, bringing in OBJ and Jonnu Smith. But can you believe in Tua and the hype around this team? Especially when you take the defense into consideration. New DC and Anthony Weaver, no Christian Wilkins, at least four new starters on that side of the ball. Should we get on the hype train or off?
Well, I'm not on the hype train. I think the East isn't as good as it was last year. I still think Buffalo, because of Josh Allen, is the best team. But if you think they can get three wins, if they beat, they have Buffalo and Jacksonville at home, and they have Tennessee, and they go to Seattle and they go to New England. I mean, three wins at plus 180 is very doable here, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, four wins. I mean, you know they're going to beat New England. They should beat Jacksonville in the opener. We'll see. Or they should beat Buffalo. We'll see. But playing Buffalo on a Sunday night at home, you got a better chance. For a Thursday, go to Seattle. Probably be a hard game, but they have a 10-day rest, so that helps them. You got Tennessee at home. They're going to beat those. And then they got to go to New England. And I'm not sure New England's is going to have a hard time. So I think they can win three. I think plus 180 at three wins or plus. But I'm not buying them because I think as the schedule goes, they have Green Bay in November 28th. Hard game. They got to go to Cleveland December 29th. Cold. The Jets January. They end up two games on the road in cold weather. You're not getting me. And in between those two games, before those two games, they have San Francisco at home and they have to go to Houston. You're not getting me there on that.
Yeah, so the win total is 9.5, juiced it to the over at minus 135. And with that in mind, if you're going to want that win total over, you're going to have to stockpile those wins early in the season. The good news is 8 of their first 11 games are against teams that missed the playoffs last year. But we've also seen under Mike McDaniel as their head coach that the Dolphins have struggled the back half of their schedule. They're 4-10 in December or later, including a pair of playoff losses to Kansas City and Buffalo. If they want to change the narrative, they have to beat good teams. And that goes back to a lot of our conversation that we've had about Miami last year and the way that things ultimately fell apart for them. Another team that has the hype train, and they did, quite frankly, going into last year, too, and lived up to it, if not exceeding some of the expectations, the Detroit Lions. They're coming off their first division title since 1993. They should have beat, as much as it, you know, I'm happy that it didn't happen, they should have beat the 49ers in the NFC Championship. They're up 17 at halftime and can't hold on. They are rolling. This offseason reshaped their defense. They got their key pieces on offense re-signed. Should we be buying the hype that the Detroit Lions can not only get to another NFC title, but maybe win it this year?
I think they're good, and I think they're going to be improved. I think the first game of the year is going to be fascinating. I mean, the Rams coming, you know, they open up with the Rams on Sunday night. Matthew Stafford back again, and we get a repeat playoff game. Yeah. We'll know the Rams will be really ready to play. But other than that, you know, before they hit the bye, they got Tampa, Arizona, and Seattle. They can get three wins there. They could get four wins. Then they go to Dallas, Minnesota. I like the team. I think they've improved the areas that they needed to improve. Offensively, you know, they helped. They lost an offensive lineman. They were able to sign Kevin Zeitler back. But for me, the key has been their secondary, and they've improved in that area. And I think that's really going to make a huge difference for them.
The favorite in the wins in first five games is 3 as well, plus 175, 2 plus 250, 4 plus 300. I think they could get 3 wins out of that first five. I guess the one at Dallas is kind of a big question mark, since that's coming out of the bye, though. They should feel good about themselves there. But this is a 12-win team last year, tied for the second best record in the NFL. With the hype comes standalone games as well. If you look at their schedule big picture, with their win total sitting at 10.5, 5-time primetime games in 2024, including their annual Thanksgiving Day game against the Bears. But they lived up to it in primetime last year, 5-1 in primetime games last season, including the playoffs. Let's keep it in that division, in that realm. The Green Bay Packers, Jordan Love, prior to the Packers divisional round loss to San Francisco last year, had a run of 21 touchdowns and just one interception. They won 7-9 games in that time to finish 9-8 on the year, secured a playoff win in Dallas in the wild card round. Love's already put himself in the conversation for a trendy MVP pick, and he'll certainly have the opportunity to do so head to head with some other really good quarterbacks of note. Are you believing the hype in Green Bay?
I am, because I think Hafley will make a difference defensively for him. I think he's going to help their defense improve. You know, but that was the issue last year. And at the second half, look, at the beginning of the year, when you watch Green Bay, they were doing everything in their power to make sure that Love didn't beat them, right? They had no faith really in Love as a quarterback, but eventually he won them over. And I think the addition of Josh Jacobs, who can do a lot of things that Aaron Jones did, but he's a more power back if he's in shape. But the key to this team has got to be they have to improve their run defense. They've got to get better, and they've got to create turnovers. They should be able to pressure the passer at a higher rate. Last year, they were 31st in interceptions. They were 23rd in turnovers defensively. They couldn't stop the run. They're 28th in yards allowed on the ground, 23rd in yards per attempt, which is significant considering that 26th in the league in people trying to run the ball on them. I mean, people were running the ball on them because they knew they could. If they don't stop that, it's going to be a problem. And I think that ultimately has got to be something that they fix. Look, they lose on the road to the Giants, a horrible loss. They come back and lose to Tampa at home, another bad loss. And then they reel off 3 wins, Carolina, Minnesota, and Chicago, and they get in, and then they destroy Dallas. I think the momentum's with them.
A really potentially challenging stretch of the schedule coming out of the bye. They're at the Bears, who, if they end up being the team that people expect them to be, would be a challenge. But then you've got the 49ers, the Miami Dolphins, and the Lions all back-to-back-to-back, teams who combined to go 35-11 last season. Win total for the Packers sitting 10.5. You are getting plus money, though, on the over if you think they can exceed expectations, if you're believing the hype. Last one here real quickly. Jim Harbaugh has exceeded expectations every stop that he has been at, turning around programs quickly. Are you believing the hype in LA?
Yeah, I am. I think, look, I believe this. One of the reasons I think the Raiders are going under is because I'm not sure about Pierce as a coach and Gardner Minshew. Then on this game, I'm because it's quarterback and head coach for me. Mm-hmm. I like Justin Herbert. I love Jim Harbaugh. Quarterback and coach, he's always improved the team, and I think he'll improve this team.
They struggled in the division last year, got swept by the Broncos, swept by the Chiefs, won one of those games against the Raiders. The other is the one that cost their head coach his job. Win total sitting 8.5 for the Chargers. Juice to the over, minus 155. People are believing in what Jim Harbaugh can do from a culture standpoint and getting the most out of his players. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Turn our attention back to the NBA. The Eastern Conference Finals got started with a bang. Will we have similar fireworks in the West tonight? Nick Whalen will join us coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. If you're new to DraftKings, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSiN VSiN, the crown is yours. If you missed any of our breakdown last segment with NBA SiriusXM radio host Nick Whalen, he did a full breakdown on his thoughts for both the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. Make sure you check that out after the show. Download in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts or on VSiN.com. And while you're at VSiN.com, check out our pro tips, because that's what we're getting into right now. Every single show here at VSiN does them one a day, each show searchable by show and by sport. But today's betting tip goes back to the article that you wrote today about interim coaches, Michael, and how over the last 24 years, 46 coaches have had an interim label, 12 were promoted to the full-time head coach, but only two were successful. And why that is something to take into account this year with Antonio Pierce earning the job in Vegas.
And you have to understand the dynamics. This is not a negative towards Antonio Pierce. This is the reality of the position, right? You get the job because you manage the ship. You know, it was a great line when Rick Venturi was the interim coach of the Baltimore Colts. His owner, Bob Irsay, then said to him, "Just get the ship back into port. That's all we need you to do." And so that's usually what it is. We just got to get the ship back to port. And so we kind of know this is a mess, but we'll clean it up when we get there. And so you make a lot of concessions. The next year, you can't go with those concessions. You have to change dramatically on who you are because you have something bigger. You know, you're not filling in. You're not a substitute teacher. And those changes can rub players the wrong way. It can change a different dynamic. And the momentum from one season to the next is hard to maintain. It really is. And then when you look, they don't have a quarterback. Like, you're not going to win games like they did. I mean, look, they completed 9 passes against the Chiefs. They got shut out by the Minnesota Vikings last year, right? They didn't. And Gardner Minshew isn't going to resolve those issues. It's going to be a challenge. They're going to have to win games with defense and the running game. And they let their best running back walk away. Zaire White's a good player, don't get me wrong. But now, you know, he wasn't as good as Josh Jacobs was 2 years ago. So a lot of has to come into order for the Raiders. I just think in this division, I mean, everybody thinks Denver's the worst team. I don't. I think the Raiders have the biggest challenge. And again, it's not Pierce. It goes back to the drafting and the selections and all the things that they have missed on over time.
Yeah, they call it an interim bump in season for a reason. Like there is a bump of because there's a change in energy, and Antonio Pierce is a great energy guy, but we're going to find out this season how he is as a head coach. And it's a very, very different role, to your point. And the talent level that you have, you talk about the Chargers, right? And the coaching turnover they have and how you're excited about them because of the coach quarterback combo. What do we have there with the Raiders? Right. Like Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell. We don't know what Antonio Pierce is as a head coach yet. So it's a very different situation. I think the point is well taken there.
Yeah, no. And I think when you want to talk about what you have to do, Pierce's comments that Aiden O'Connell deserves the opportunity to be the starter is reflective of last year. Like he does not. He didn't play good last year.
Yeah.
But he helped you get a job and become the head coach. But you have to divorce yourself. See, this is the example. He didn't really help you become the head coach. You can't go with him. Yeah. There's no way.
And I like conceptually the Mahomes rules, playing off Jordan rules. I think that's fun and it's a good mentality. But to say that you have the recipe for beating the Chiefs is a little bit silly to say. And I think that most people, when they heard that, agreed. But again, only time will tell. Win total for the Raiders sitting 6.5. It is time, Michael, to close out the show like we always do with a little Why Not Wednesday on a Wednesday afternoon. Let's roll it.
Uh-oh.
Question. Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
We love that plus money honey, but is it too crazy sometimes? We shall see. We had Nick Whalen on the program a little bit ago. He's all in on the Celtics. He thinks they can get a sweep. He thinks at worst, based on the bets that he's placing, it's 4-1 in Boston's favor. Michael, 9-1 is the price on the Indiana Pacers to come back in the Eastern Conference Final. Could you say why not?
I could say why not. I'm not with Nick. When Nick almost stunned me last week, last segment, when he said that this is going to be a sweep. I didn't see a team that was completely dominant of the other team. I just didn't see that, you know? And I think you have to, like, when you watch the Heat play in game one against the Celtics, you said, yep, they're the better teams. Cleveland, yep, they're the better team. I didn't get that sense. That's why I asked the question the first time, and he didn't get that sense from the question I asked, but then he went with the sweep, so maybe he knows a hell of a lot more than I do on that one.
He was talking more like the mental side of things, right? Like, how much will that loss, knowing you could have and should have won, impact them moving forward? I don't know. We've seen so many series where one game is not like the other, so only time will tell, but 9-1 against the price for the Indiana Pacers there. How about going in the Western Conference Finals here? Maybe that plus 145 price isn't enough on the Mavs, but if you like Dallas, could you say why not to Kyrie Irving to earning MVP in the Western Conference at 14-1?
Oh, I'm easy on that one. I mean, I've complained about Kyrie Irving numerous times, about selfishness, about some weird things. But this is a different Kyrie Irving than we're used to. You just have to say it, right?
Yeah.
You got to stop talking about that. He's a different person, different player. I get all that, right? Now, let's not confuse it. The one thing, he's different personality. He's still an elite player, and he's one of the best one-on-one players in the league. And he can take over a game anytime he wants. And he's playing defense now, and he's playing – I mean, I'm a Mavs fan. I am. I'm rooting for him. So, yeah, you can get me to say that one easily.
Hell of a rebrand from Brooklyn to Dallas for Kyrie Irving. But let's stick on that trend. Should they win the Western Conference, could you say why not for them to go on and win it all? 5-1 the price right now.
I mean, why not? Right? Stormy, now you got 4 in a row. We're on a roll. There's 4 why nots for you. This is a record on a Wednesday.
Michael
is not on board with
the Celtics. I am vibing this.
And I'm not on board. I think the Mavericks are really good. I think that they've improved their defense. They do a great job of adjusting. Look, they've lost game one in every series, and they've come back to win. And they're good. And I think they believe Max Kleber will be back to play. So I'm going to go there.
Let's turn gears now to the National Football League. We talked a lot about the Pittsburgh Steelers earlier on in the program, and it seems bettors are split. You have them with the most people betting on them to go over their win total, and then the majority of tickets on them to go under their win total as well. What about 12 wins? Could they have a 12-win season? 8-1. Could they just soar high as ever, and Mike Tomlin gets the most out of this team with a fixed quarterback situation?
You're not getting me here. No way. No way. You're not getting a why not here. No, I think the North is too hard. I think the North is way too hard. And I think it's going to be a challenge, right? So, 12 wins is hard to come by. I think, to me, if they get to 10, that's a remarkable season. Anybody gets to 10 in the North, I think it's a remarkable season.
Yeah. The back end of that season is so brutal. It's a no shot instead of a why not for me there. We just had a lengthy talk about the Raiders and Antonio Pierce. For them to have the fewest wins in the regular season is 12-1. Could you see them being worse than even the Patriots and Panthers and the lower echelon teams?
I would put pizza money on it. I think it's a halfway why not. Yeah, for sure. Because look, I think any team that's going to have the first pick of the draft, what is symbolic with the first pick in the draft? You don't have a quarterback. Every team that picks, rarely does a team have first pick in the draft that has a quarterback. Now, the Bears got it from Carolina, so that was and they didn't have a quarterback. Think about that, right? Yep. So, the reason you're picking first in the draft is because you don't have a quarterback, and the Raiders don't have an above-the-line starting quarterback. That's just what it is. You can have all the skill you want. You could have Parker and Myers and Bowers and Mayer, and you could have all. If you can't throw it to them, who's getting open?
Producer Elliot, why even throw this terrible one in here? Help me out. Aaron Rodgers to throw 5,000 plus yards in the regular season. It's 18-1. I'm just going to answer for you, Michael. That's a no for me, dog.
Thank you. No way. No way. Look, if you're throwing for 5,000 yards, you're never calling any runs. And if you want to not call any runs for a 41-year-old quarterback, you're not playing Madden here. We just can't call passes every play.
Yeah, he'd need a former Commanders offensive coordinator in order to have that opportunity. But he's never even come close to 5,000 yards in his career. What I would say, though, if you think Aaron Rodgers is going to have a successful season, he's going to get that arm going. He's 22-1 to lead the league in passing. You think Tua Tagovailoa last year, 4,624 yards for him when he led the league. So there are different ways to approach it at significantly better numbers. That's a wrap for us. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Keep it locked right here on VSiN. Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and the crew coming up next.